listening to Diabetes Exposed, the not-so-terrible truth. And I'm your host, a tad diabetic blogger, Tad Roberts. The mission of this show is to dispel myths and false preconceptions and to find excellence in diabetes self-management by fighting the troubling trend of low expectations. We can achieve our dreams, even with the burden of diabetes and the masses who say we can't. I know, because I've done it, and every single day I find more and more diabetics who have found the secrets to good control and a beautiful life despite the presence of an incurable condition. I want to help you tap into strategies that will lead to your own success and help you see the power of your own self-efficacy. But it all starts with first steps, and the step you're taking now just might change the way you see everything.
Please note that this show is not meant to be medical advice or a substitute for medical advice. No changes should be made to your diabetes self-management without first consulting a doctor.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tad Roberts, and welcome to the show. I want to start off today by making it crystal clear that I have the highest regard and the utmost respect for our doctors. They show a remarkable dedication to their discipline while facing a mountain of stresses and strains that most outside the medical community never know about. I have a lot of doctors in my family, and I've heard many stories of the trials and tribulations that those possessing an MD at the end of their name face long after the many grueling years of medical school and residency. So, you may think it odd that today I'm going to suggest that you stop listening to them. Well, let me clarify. I don't mean to completely stop listening to your doctors. Rather, I want you to listen differently and more carefully to what they're saying. Sometimes we look to our doctors for all the answers, expecting them to fully and accurately solve all of our medical problems. We don't want to engage in any self-analysis or have any responsibility placed on our shoulders, so we place the full burden of our bodies on our physicians. But sometimes we forget that medical science is imperfect and that diagnosing and treating many conditions isn't as easy as diagnosing and fixing a car's transmission problems. Sometimes we forget just how infinitely complex the human body is and how many possibilities our doctors are contemplating with each recommendation they make. After years of schooling and certifications, a CPA still makes accounting errors. A master-level auto service technician misdiagnoses a problem sometimes. And our best financial advisors don't always make the best stock picks for us. Sometimes we forget that a medical degree does not imbue a doctor with infallibility. Sometimes we forget that our doctors are human. A couple of years ago, I watched my cell phone scoot slowly and randomly on my desk as I worked. Once again, I had left my phone on vibrate after a movie or church or, I don't know, some event that strictly prohibits an audible notification that a call is coming in. After enduring a few seconds of this peculiar activity and that annoying, rapid, buzzing insect-like pulse, I answered the phone and issued a somewhat dubious hello. A minute later, I hit the end call button on my phone and stared at my desk in total dismay. It had been a nurse at my general practitioner's office calling to give my latest test results. She said, "Overall, your labs came back fine. However, there were a few numbers that were off. Creatinine and bun levels were high and EGFR was low. It could just be dehydration, but the doctor was concerned and wanted you to know. You know, you're welcome to come back in and take a new set of labs if you would like." Aided by my ego, I quickly came to the conclusion that it had to be dehydration, as the nurse had suggested. I mean, what else could it be? I thought with growing indignation. I had a solid 23-year track record of normal numbers. Only some temporary abnormality could account for the out-of-range variances. And if that was the case, well, there was no need to go back in and take more labs. Everything would just naturally work itself out down the road. Although I tried to dismiss the lab results and push the news to the far recesses of my troubled mind, I couldn't get that call out of my head. I was used to issuing broad grins at the end of those calls, calls that just confirmed that everything I was doing in my diabetes self-management was working. Now my perfect track record had been broken. Something wasn't right, and in my heart, I knew it. Dehydration? Well, it was certainly a possibility, but not probable. I wasn't sold on that theory. I needed answers. Because it can be a primary indicator of impaired kidney function, the elevated creatinine level had been the biggest of the doctor's concerns. So, I went to the internet and started researching its possible causes. Yes, dehydration was one, but there were many others that either directly affected creatinine levels or could indirectly cause them to rise by damaging the kidneys. The list included diets high in meat and protein, high blood pressure, creatine and dietary supplements, NSAIDs, that's an acronym, N-S-A-I-D, it's non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. But there were also high potassium levels, strenuous exercise, an enlarged prostate, a muscular physique, and of course, diabetes. I didn't like the look of that list because outside of high potassium and high blood pressure, nearly every single one of those offenders could be checked off on the Tad Roberts list. Now the big question was whether my lab results were just a one-time biological fluke or showed that I was heading in the direction of chronic kidney disease. It's amazing how a perfectly balanced mixture of fear and denial can stop you dead in your tracks. Despite my newfound knowledge, I waited until my next office visit to get that all-consuming answer. However, this time, before donating more blood to the lab, I made sure that I was fully hydrated so that could be completely ruled out. I prayed more times than I can count that hydration would be the culprit and that my numbers would just return to their normal in-range levels. Then, the past 3 months could just be chalked up as a nightmare I finally woke up from. But that didn't happen. This call from the nurse echoed the previous one. The same numbers were still off, and it was now clear something was wrong with my kidneys. When I learned about the Diabetes Control and Complications Trial and its results in 1993, I knew it revealed that good, tight diabetes control could dramatically reduce the possibility of diabetic neuropathy, retinopathy, and kidney disease. But I also knew that good control didn't guarantee a complication-free life as a type 1 diabetic. However, as long as my lab results came back normal, it was an outcome I didn't really have to consider. After 23 years, I thought I was home free. In some illogical way, I had developed a somewhat cocky sense of invulnerability. Now that I'd been brought back to reality, I kept replaying the words of Luke Skywalker to the Emperor in Return of the Jedi, "Your overconfidence is your weakness." That pointed declaration really got the Emperor's blood boiling, but for me and my sometimes overly sweetened blood, we were humbled by the thought. Yes, my overconfidence was my weakness. I hadn't felt that low and that terrified since the day I was diagnosed with type 1. I felt like a failure. It was as if all those years of good A1Cs, working out, watching my diet, and learning the strategies of successful diabetes self-management were all for nothing. I know that assessment is far from logical, but that was the way I internalized everything after getting those lab results. My heart was broken, and I grieved in the only way I could. I knew something was wrong with my kidney function, but I didn't know exactly what or how bad it was. I figured this was beyond the scope of my GP, so I got a referral to a nephrologist who's a kidney specialist. When the appointment day came, I was nervous as hell. The nephrologist would have been too if he had known what he was in for. I walked into the exam room with a stack of papers and notes detailing my lab results for the past 15 years. I had charts showing the absence of any odd trends and my own analysis of behavioral factors that might be responsible for my kidney problems. Out of the mountain of paperwork provided, the doctor's attention fell on a short handwritten list of possible reasons for my impaired kidney function. This was the list. Number one, 20 plus years of creatine monohydrate. It's a supplement I'd been taking for weightlifting. Number two, 20 years of weightlifting. Three, a long-term high-protein diet, including up to a third gallon of milk each day. Four, the intentional elevation of blood sugar levels for exercise and other strenuous activity. And five, anti-inflammatories such as ibuprofen, ones I'd been taking for some disc problems in my lower back. As the doctor went down this list, item by item, he pretty much shook his head, dismissing each one until he came to the final option. Suddenly, he perked up and looked at me and asked for more information on the NSAIDs I had been taking. I told him that I'd been taking ibuprofen pretty consistently for as long as I could remember for various sports aches, pains, and injuries. Then I had him turn in my chart to the list of medications I was taking, and I pointed to a pretty powerful prescription painkiller for my lower back problems. He asked how long I'd been taking the painkiller, and I told him that my back doctor had prescribed it for me a couple of years ago. Well, then we switched gears for a while to talk about me, my lifestyle, and my diabetes self-management. He asked a lot of questions, and he listened carefully to my often lengthy answers. I'm sure he could tell I was scared. Every response I made possessed a subtext that proclaimed it loudly. Nevertheless, he was patient and compassionate, and it was probably the longest doctor's appointment I'd ever had. After I'd fully spilled my guts, he assured me that good days were yet to come, that I hadn't reached some dire point of no return. Some adjustments would need to be made. In his initial assessment, he believed that although the other items on my list could certainly contribute to my kidney issues, it was the NSAIDs that were of greatest concern. Apparently, the dosage I was taking would be stressful on a non-diabetic's kidneys, but for a diabetic already facing extra renal stresses, the high doses were way too much. So, we made a small adjustment to my blood pressure medication, and he instructed me to stay away from the NSAIDs for now. All in all, it was a very positive appointment with one exception. I had now been classified as stage 1 CKD. That's chronic kidney disease. Well, I'm not one for half measures. As instructed, I stopped taking all NSAIDs outside of a low 80 milligram dose of aspirin as a preventative for heart attack and stroke. The nephrologist had said that the dose was so low that the benefits far outweighed any risk. But I went several steps further. I stopped taking creatine monohydrate and all athletic performance supplements. I started monitoring my protein intake more carefully and reduced almost half the milk I was drinking each day. And I learned a way to reduce how much I had to elevate my blood sugar level prior to intense exercise. I saw the nephrologist a few times over the next year, and my numbers had begun to trend in a positive direction. Toward that 1 year mark, I sat down in his office for the results of my latest labs. Once again, I was so nervous. I was seriously edgy at all of these appointments. Looking up from my chart, the doctor smiled at me, and he said he had good news. All of my numbers had returned to normal, and my A1C was just about the lowest it had ever been. For a moment, I was paralyzed, unable to move, speak, or do anything but watch a few tears drip down on my Dallas Cowboys t-shirt. Once I regained my mobility and composure, I thanked him several times for everything he had done and helping me turn this thing around. Then he gave me more good news. He said he didn't need to see me again for another year. I walked out of the office that day sporting a broad grin, but it was a cautious one. I had achieved victory for now, but I knew that one set of labs didn't make any guarantees for the future. The NSAIDs had likely done some permanent damage to my kidneys, so as a diabetic, I knew that I would have to guard them well for the rest of my life. I learned an important lesson from my earlier overconfidence, and I vowed never to fall into that trap again. You might think that I should have felt betrayed by the back doctor who prescribed high doses of NSAIDs to a type 1 diabetic. Shouldn't he have known what that could do to my kidneys? Well, maybe. But that's an arguable point, and honestly, it's not worth arguing. I knew, yes, I knew that anti-inflammatories were hard on the kidneys. I had read of the effects more than once in various articles on diabetes self-management. I failed myself by not asking more questions and not doing the requisite research. I wanted relief from my back pain, and when the doctor said the medication would help, I heard what I wanted to hear. I combined that selective hearing with my brazen overconfidence and decided I could do whatever I wanted with impunity. That was my mistake, not a doctor's. And this brings me to the whole point of this podcast. As I said in the introduction, we have to realize that our doctors are human. They took an oath to do no harm, and I truly believe that that is their honest intention. But they didn't take an oath promising perfection. None of us are perfect. Me, you, none of us, neither are our doctors. We all make mistakes and oversights. It's a reality we've got to acknowledge. So what does that mean for us diabetics? Well, just like we can be our own worst enemy, we can also be our own best diabetes advocate. We have to listen carefully to our doctors. And if something doesn't sound right, or we just don't understand, we have to probe deeper. We can't be lazy and just accept. Do some research. Get a second opinion. But don't just blindly accept something that might appear unacceptable. The success of our diabetes self-management depends on it. Part of working with our diabetes team is acknowledging our responsibility and taking time to fully understand each action and step of our self-management. That understanding endows us with a powerful self-confidence and keeps us safe from falling into a dangerous overconfidence. Incidentally, I was able to solve most of my back problems without additional or kidney-damaging drugs. My back doctor, and yes, the same one who prescribed the NSAIDs, was able to perform a fairly simple procedure called a rhizotomy that brought me a lot of relief. So, sometimes we have to go in search of better options. Very often, they do exist. And now, when I watch Return of the Jedi with the kids, I smile when I hear that line. Lesson learned. Plus, it feels pretty good not sharing character traits with really, really bad guys. All right, and now for our final segment, a diabetes success story. I really need to get some good lead-in music for that. I'll work on that later. Anyway, today's success story is one that I sort of stumbled into by accident. A couple of weeks ago, I was making one of those dreaded calls to customer service. In this case, it was the customer service department of a business I purchased from. I'd been overcharged on some recent transactions, and I was a little upset and ready to let somebody have it. Well, a very pleasant woman answered the phone, and she listened intently as I enumerated all of the billing issues. After I finished my explanation, she said her name was Angela, and she confidently proclaimed that she would get everything taken care of for me. I didn't have to worry. Well, I thanked her with an almost apologetic tone as I was feeling guilty now for being so frustrated when I called. And as promised, Angela got everything taken care of and was kind, professional, and helpful through it all. It's a little complicated, so I can't really explain the full details of how I came to learn of Angela's type 1 diabetes, but suffice it to say that this unwanted call to customer service turned into one of the best 20-minute conversations I've had in a long, long time. As we talked, I learned that Angela had been diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at 16. She talked of how tough it was having to deal with the burden of living with diabetes and learning diabetes self-management at an age that already places so much educational and social pressure on a maturing youth. But what followed in her story really caught me off guard. She went on to explain how she made it through that tough time and learned to manage her diabetes quite well. She's now on a pump, and her last A1C was really good. I could sense the smile on her face as she told me about it. She had a very mature and positive attitude about living with diabetes now, and I complimented her on her success and her uncommonly upbeat outlook. I went on to tell her about my blog and upcoming book and took another opportunity to praise her for her positivity. The latter comment happened when I explained about my recent writings and video blogs about online negativity. I quickly found that Angela and I had a lot in common. Angela went on to explain how she too had been very troubled by the amount of negativity she saw from diabetics. Now it was her turn to be frustrated. She went on for a couple of minutes, giving many details and examples of how she had encountered negativity and how it had really brought her down. I told her that that was a big problem with those of us who believed in our own personal power and ability to take control of our diabetes and, by extension, our lives. Our attitude becomes both our blessing and our curse, because the stronger our belief in our own self-efficacy, the more frustrated we get with those who just can't see it. I told Angela to stay positive because she was not alone. I told her about the dozens and dozens of diabetics that have contacted me, thanking me for my blogs about online negativity. I told her that we were actually a very large group, but unfortunately one that's been quieted by the despair of online bloggers and depressing social media posts. I joked with her that we could transform the world if we could get positive-minded diabetics to blog, tweet, and make other social media posts with the frequency and passion of the negative crowd that perpetuates a sense of hopelessness. I finally had to let Angela go because I didn't want her to get in trouble for having lengthy diabetic chats while she was on the clock. But in that 20 minutes or so that we talked, I made another friend to add to a growing band of diabetic brothers and sisters not ready or willing to settle for the status quo. Just so you know, that was a not-so-subtle hint if you didn't get it. If you are a believer, and that's the best term I guess I can come up with for now, then let the world know. Speak it loudly, boldly, for all to hear. Well, that does it for this show. If you'd like to reach me, feel free to email me anytime at tad@atadiabetic.com, or you can complete the contact form on the blog site. Also, make sure you subscribe on the blog for important updates and subscribe to the feed for this podcast. Thank you for listening. And remember, you have more control than others want you to believe. Don't let the rest of the world dash your dreams. You are better than that. No low expectations allowed. See you next time.